This is lesson number 6 about training the brain. Some time ago, I was at the school where I do a school veggie garden, a wonderful little school. It's actually quite a big school, but we run lots of garden beds where we grow lots of vegetables for families to take home and enjoy. And often a teacher will bring out their group of children to learn about gardening and to explore the garden and look for slugs and critters and all that sort of fun stuff. And I remember one day a teacher brought out her little kiddies, and one of the little kiddies did something wrong. I don't know what it was, but the teacher belittled them, you know, spoke down to them, and it was quite a shaming type of behavior from the teacher. In a sense, it was abuse, a psychological abuse. And I could see this little child feeling quite hurt. And I also wondered later on about how, whether this child had also been, that would have compounded on other abuse messages that might have been hearing from parents or siblings or from the other schoolyard bullies, and just compounding upon the child a message that they were dumb or something. I may have been reading too much into it, I often do, but I know this is what sort of happened for me, and that I had a similar sort of experience. And I must have been around about 6 or 7, and I was at my school desk in the 1970s, and I was writing, and you know how there's a margin, a line runs down the page? Anyway, my teacher came up from behind me, and she said, and my writing mustn't have been up against the margin, it must have been out off the side or something, and she said to me, "What's the margin doing there?" And I, as a little kid, like, didn't know quite what to say to that question, and I said, "It's always been there." And then I heard, and she had this massive, great big leather strap, about this long, and whack, right down on the desk, right next door to me, and it just shocked me. I just freaked out. You know, I wasn't trying to be smart or cheeky or, you know, give her a hard time or anything. I was just, well, it's always been there, and but her response, and then it hit me, bang, and not the strap didn't hit me, it hit the desk, and I just froze up, absolutely freaked me out. And the beliefs that set up in my mind from that very day was that I was dumb, I was stupid, I can't get anything right, and I had a lot of fear. As you can understand, I was frozen, you know, by her over-the-top abuse. It was a trauma. She traumatized me. And you think, oh, just a teacher having a bad hair day. But all those little things, they actually really did a traumatic effect on the brain. And then, you know, because our brains are so much like a sponge, you know, other incidents fed into that belief pool, or what I could call the cesspool, that sort of confirmed that negative error filled belief. And I really struggled in school, you know. And Rick Hansen, he says that our brain is like Velcro for the negative and Teflon for the positive. And so negative events just stick, and they become really stuck in the brain and can really change the course of our direction in our life. But as positive ones, they just slip off. We dismiss them. They don't seem to stick as well. And we have to actually learn how to make our brain more Velcro-ish for those positive experiences. But later on in my schooling, I had a teacher who really, really helped me with my maths. My maths was, I just couldn't understand maths. I was put into the dummies class. But she actually took me through the absolute little basics, all the little things I never learned, probably because I was living in fear. And she taught me those basic little things, and slowly I started to believe that I could actually do maths, all right? And I went on to be top of that class, and I got a prize at the class prize giving at the end of the year, which was amazing. And then later on, I've actually now got 2 degrees. I've got a degree in agriculture, and I've also got a degree in theology. Now, for someone who really struggled at school, even into my, you know, teenage years, I think I've done okay. But I had to start telling myself the truth. I had to start really training my brain to actually to dispute that woman's what happened that back there when I was 6 or 7. And just think, you've probably had events like that in your life where you've had a negative trauma or something like that's happened to your brain, and you have gone down a thinking track. And so we need to really treat our brain, and actually even think our whole body, because there's a lot of evidence to say that the body keeps score, which is a book about events that happen to us. So we need to start telling ourselves the truth, to tell us something different to negative and condemning messages. And so what I would like to ask, if I could just talk to Jesus face to face, what would God want to say to you about what happened to you in those experiences where you went off on a really negative way, because that's just the way it happens, all right? What would God want to say to me if he came along right after that strap landed? if Jesus had walked into the room and said, Barry, I'd have a word with you about what happened back there. First of all, mate, it's not your fault. She's having a bad hair day. She doesn't know how to handle stuff like that. Not your fault. Another thing is, you're learning. And it's okay not to have learned about margins yet. Really, it's not a big deal. Don't take it so personally. It's about her. It's okay, you're learning. I also want to tell you, Barry, I love the way you write. You're brilliant. You're going to do fine. And I also want to tell you, keep writing. You're doing well. And you're really clever. Now, if I'd had Jesus come alongside me as that little 6 or 7 year old and tell me that, that would have made the whole of difference. All right. So what I now need to do as an adult is to tell my little Barry, my little inner child, all those messages that Jesus is telling me. Okay. You see, our brain is so malleable. It's plastic. It can change, and we just talked in the previous lesson about how that happens, you know, that rope bridge going back and forth. And we can actually train it to think in new ways. And I had taken on an identity of being dumb, but actually my identity is not dumb. It is not dumb. Your truest identity, not the identity you have adopted from your experiences and labels placed on you. We need to focus on what's your truest identity. The identity that actually that God sees you as. Alright? Your truest identity. Now, to get a picture of what that actually would look like. Well, Jesus never used positive affirmations to bolster the concept of himself or to train his brain. He knew himself completely, 100%. He was secure, just rock solid identity. And he said, look, I'm the bread of life, I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life, I'm the vine, I'm the good shepherd, I'm the door, I'm the resurrection and the life. Jesus didn't need to use those as affirmations. He just said, this is who I really am. And people didn't like his strong belief in himself, his confidence. It really rattled their world and still rattles it. But we've got to think about what are we thinking about. And in Paul's letter to a little church called the Philippians, he said this: finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. So Paul's just raising the standard to say, I want you to think about these things. All right, focus and train your brain to think about these crucial things. So we need to train the brain. And I like to think about my brain as being a bit like a wild horse at times. And it'll just run off here, there, and run off here and there. And it's got a mind of its own, my brain. And we need to tame it and to get it into discipline and to get it into under control. And taming it and training it the way that actually God wants it to go. And I remember one of the most wonderful things I ever did when I was in pastoral ministry was to get people who had major mental illnesses to come and give a sermon or a brief message. And one of these persons was a lady who really struggled with psychotic voices. So these are very intrusive and sometimes harsh messages, and she had had to learn how to train her brain. And she picked the passage about where Jesus says, blessed are the meek. Now, it was interesting, as her and I talked more about this, we discovered that the word meek really is about a horse that has been tamed or trained or brought in under control. And we thought about equestrian and how that rider and the horse, they're one, and the rider has trained that horse to be under control. And she likened it to her challenge with hearing voices. Basically, she was saying, I have had to learn to train my brain to dispute those noises, those voices, and to tell myself the truth. And I thought, and when she shared it, the congregation that she was talking to just really fully understood what she was on about, because a lot of them struggle with voices. A lot of them struggle with negative beliefs. But here she was saying, we have to work at our brain. We have to train it. And she had done it. And it was an incredible, incredible message, and really blessed me and blessed, and I still remember it very clearly. So the question is, what are you wanting it, your brain, to learn? And what are those millimeter learnings, those little things that you need your brain to become really understand that this is the truth? And what we've got to do is we've got to do it in a very, I believe, in a very prayerful manner. And prayer has got to undergird this training the brain. And so we spend time in listening, and we spend time in thinking about what we actually need to carefully train our thinking in. And so one of the things that I have used now for quite a few number of years is a thinking compass. And so what is a compass? Well, a compass is one of those little round things, and it's got a little arrow pointing on it, and it's sort of magnetized. And so, and they use it in the bush and out in sea, and it's always used when you look at it to say where what direction am I heading, because the arrow always points north, right? Magnetic north. And so you can say, right, I'm wanting to go this direction, so the arrow is pointing this way, so I'm going that direction. And I liken it to what I call a thinking compass, because these are points that I want my brain to keep thinking that way. keep thinking that way. So a thinking compass is a direction GPS sort of thing, where you go, right, this is where I'm going, this is where I'm heading, these are things I'm going to focus on. And it's kind of a journal, and into that little journal, and I've got mine here, and I'll show you later, but any truth that you might get that just goes, you go, aha, oh, that's interesting, I need to think about that more, perhaps my brain needs some help in that, something that shouts out, this is for you. And when I'm doing coaching with people, I always encourage them to have a notebook or a piece of paper to write notes down for them to think about, and little things that they need to go, uh-huh, this is, oh, that's making me think. It might be a quote, all right, from somebody you really like, or it might be a verse of scripture that goes, this is for me. Or it could be sort of insights from counseling session or coaching, conversations, spiritual direction, therapy. It might be some words that someone has said to you as a word of encouragement. And I like to keep what I call an encouragement journal with, because every now and again people share a little of encouragement. Hey, thanks Barry for doing this. So I write that stuff down and I keep it in a journal, and just to keep me as a sort of a thinking compass, this is training my brain. My brain wants to go down the old thinking, stinky track, but I'm wanting to go this track. And really those little insights can really come from anywhere, and you might find them on my blog at turningthepage.co.nz. And so what I've got here, I'll show you, this is my first thinking compass, and you can see how it's quite worn and battered, and I've had it a long time, and I've looked at it and I've read it, and originally when I did this, it's all been written out in pen, which I really encourage you to do, because there's something quite tangible about using a pen and paper. And I write them out, and then every day I read these, and sometimes I also read them out loud. So here's my first one that I wrote here. What I focus on gets me. Focus on the negatives, challenges will always take me down. Focus on the positive good things will always give me hope. Now, I read that at the last of my depression, all right? I read that every day, maybe twice a day. And that trained my brain to say, focus on the positive, the good things. It will always give me hope. Because I knew if I was to focus on the negative challenges, I'm just going to keep on going down. Now, this is a constant. I don't think I'm alone in this. I don't think I'm alone in this at all. I need to keep telling myself, focus on the positive, focus on the good things, it'll give me hope. Yeah, there's bad, tough stuff going on, but I'm going to keep focused on the good. I will work on the negative stuff, but my heart and my mind, I want to keep focused on the good things. Here's another one. The thoughts I indulge grow stronger. The thoughts I acknowledge and put in their place lose their power to discourage me. All right, so those are a couple out of this book that I've looking very battered and bruised. And what I do now too is that I actually turn those insights into what I call affirmations. And so I take those words and I just change them slightly and put them into an affirmation. Now, affirmations, I think they can have a bad rap. That affirmation word is a loaded word and can be a trigger word. And it's like some people use them as, if I believe it, it will happen. Well, that's just not true. And there's this thing called the law of attraction. If I say it, it will come to pass, sort of thing. It's all mysterious and woo-woo. And often what they're affirming is going to happen is something other than I think God would actually truly want for you. Like, I heard one, I'm driving my red Ferrari down the beach, and I'm like, I don't think God's interested in giving me a red Ferrari, really. I think he'd be quite happy with just a car that's secure and safe and gets me from A to B. But affirmations have a bad rap. But I want you to change the idea around getting those probably quite self-centered sort of ideals, into something actually where we are firming up our truest identity, you know, firming up who God sees us to be. You know, as a you know, that story I started off with about the small inner child, what it needs to hear. Well, I want to create affirmations that firm up positive, good beliefs for that inner child in me. What does that little child need to hear over and over again? You're loved. You're good. You're going to make it. You're going to be all right. And so we take on these thinking compass compass moments, and we turn them into a message that our soul needs to hear again and again. So I always start my affirmations with the words I am. Now the subconscious takes any sentence that starts with the word I am and interprets it to be a command, a directive to make it happen, you know, and it's a very confidence type two words, I am. And you know, we've just looked at Jesus and he said, I am the bread of life, I am the vine. And so I always want to start my affirmations with the words I am. And it just starts off the brain in saying, this is who I am. This is who I am. Also like to, if I can, I like to create a word picture. So, and Jesus did this. He used words like, I am the bread of life. I am the vine. I am the door. So I like to create like a word picture, so that sort of gets the brain thinking in a visual sort of way. So things like, I'm a cup receiving God's goodness. I'm a cup giving out God's goodness. I am making garlands for God. And that's actually a psalm. I can't remember which one it was, but I am making garlands for God. So the brain is saying, I'm doing something very special and worshipful and delightful for God. I'm being led by the Good Shepherd. Now that comes straight out of Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. So I've just changed it around and said, saying to my brain, I'm being led by the Good Shepherd. Alright? How about this one? I am the lost son feeling the Father's warm embrace. Whoa! I am the lost son feeling the Father's warm embrace. So I'm just telling my brain, I am like that son, and I'm feeling my Heavenly Father's warm embrace around me. All right. The next thing is about creating a great affirmation is include an action word ending with ing. So the active verb, sort of adds power to the effect of actually seeing it happening right now. There is action happening in line with your identity. So if you look back at those ones that I just shared, I said that I'm a cup receiving, I'm a cup giving, I'm making, I'm being, I'm feeling. So there's always an ing on the end of it. It just says that it's action, it's happening. It's happening right now in your identity. So I am making garlands for God. So this is something happening right now. Actually, I'm doing it right now. It's happening. The next thing is keep it brief. Keep it short and simple. KISS. Keep it short and simple. And it needs to be short enough and memorable enough for you to easily remember it. And one of the things that you will see, if you do this long enough, you will see these things coming to pass as such. So one of my affirmations is, I am a writer, okay, and I'm a writer, and I'm writing and helping people all over the world. And so when, and I hear this every day, and when, so when someone emails me and says, hey, thank you so much for your writing, immediately my brain says, oh, that's an affirmation, that's affirming what you've been telling yourself. There you go, there's the evidence to back up what that brief little statement is. Oh, yeah, okay, so you start to see it true. And so it builds like a confirmation in your brain that actually this is really who you are. This is who your identity really, really is. And so you need to keep them brief. It's not a whole big, long sentence. It's not a manual. It's just really nice and short and simple and easy to remember, easy to quote back to yourself. The next thing is that I think your affirmation needs to be focused on a first thing. Now, what's the first thing? Well, C.S. Lewis, he said this, put first things first and we get second things thrown in. Put second things first and we lose both first and second things. Now, what's a first and second thing? Well, probably the best illustration I can think of is actually a Bible story from around Solomon, and this is one of the wisest people we've ever known. And it was right at the very start of Solomon's life, and God, I'll just read this passage to you. That night God appeared to Solomon and said to him, ask for whatever you want to give you, want me to give you. Just imagine that, if God came to you and said, ask whatever you want and I'll give it to you, all right? And Solomon answered God, look, you've shown great kindness to David, his father, and have made me king in his place. So he was king. Now, Lord God, let your promise to my father David be confirmed, for you have made him king over a people who are as numerous as the dust of the earth. And this is what he asked for, okay? He said, give me wisdom and knowledge that I may lead this people, for who is able to govern this great people of yours? So he said, give me wisdom and knowledge. That's really what I want. And God said to Solomon, since this is your heart's desire and you have not asked for wealth, possessions, or honor, nor the death of your enemies, and since you have not asked for a long life but for wisdom and knowledge to govern my people, for whom I've made you king, therefore wisdom and knowledge will be given you, and I'll also give you wealth, possessions, honor, such as no king has ever before you have had, and none after you will ever have. Now see the difference, all right? So a first thing for Solomon was receiving wisdom and knowledge from God to lead his people. Now so many of us, a first thing for many of us will be things like wealth, possessions, honor, long life, looking good, all that sort of stuff. But he actually said, no, I actually want something a bit deeper. Not a bit deeper, a lot deeper. I want wisdom and knowledge to lead. And God gave him that. And God also said, because you've chosen a first thing, I'm going to throw second things in. Now, if he had chosen the second things, like receiving wealth, positions, blah, 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 he would have not received wisdom and knowledge. Now, we could argue that later in his life, he didn't show much wisdom and knowledge. Especially when he got wealthy in possessions and all that stuff. But in your affirmations, in what you really want to teach in your brain, focus on a first thing, not on a second thing like wealth and all that sort of stuff. Not I'm driving my red Ferrari down the beach. No, go for something much deeper, much more in line with who God is. You know, I'm making garlands for God. Wow. You know, and you'll quite likely get second things thrown in, but as long as you keep that first thing. So C.S. Lewis, put first things first and we get second things thrown in. Put second things first and we lose both first and second things. So let's get down to some practical things. So it takes around about 67 days, according to Dr. Shannon Irvine, that the brain, to change a thinking habit and make it really meshed in. So remember how we did the bridge crossing back and forth? 67 days. You're like, 67 days? Yep, 67 days. And in the first 21 days, it's going to be hard yakka, because the brain is saying, this is not going to work. This is ridiculous. What are you doing? You're telling me stuff I don't believe in. And the brain and those old belief patterns, they're going to dispute what you're trying to learn. This isn't safe. This isn't new. This is silly. Stay with the familiar. But after around about 21 days, the neural networks in your brain for the old habit of thinking, and the new habit thinking, they're around about exactly the same. All right, so you've got the same thinking habits there. But at that time, you have a choice to go back to the old or to continue on to the new habit, that new thinking habit. So you've actually got to keep persisting at through those 21 days, 67 days at least. Just keep telling yourself the truth. Keep telling yourself the truth. It feels mechanical. It feels contrived. It feels stupid. It feels this isn't going to work. But eventually it does, because you're actually training your brain. Just like a wild horse needs training. It just takes time, millimeter by millimeter, just keeping going at it. A key for this is to, what I would say, is to meditatively visualize that thing happening, and seeing happening right now in this present moment. And what you're saying to yourself is that, brain, this is what is happening, and you need to get with the program. I am making garlands for God. I am writing, and it's helping thousands of people. You know, I'm a writer, and I'm just creating blog posts that touch thousands of people. And I just keep telling myself that all the time. And you'll see it come true. Eventually the brain will catch up with what you're telling itself. Just like a horse just needs to be trained. And so another practical matter is writing. I write them down. Tangible, ink on paper. That does a lot of good for the brain to actually see something where you have traced it with your hand and written it down. The other way that I do is to, once I've done that, is I create an audio file on my cell phone, all right? And I listen to my affirmations every day. And the brain will actually hear that as kind of self-talk. So your brain will hear you saying to yourself, I'm making garlands for God, our God. I'm making garlands for God, our God. And I just keep on telling myself. The other thing to do is to record your progress. And it could be just like a tick in a box, or it could be a cross on the calendar. Or if you may want to get some of those little sticky little stars or red dots or something, and just put them up on your calendar, bang, bang, bang. Bang, bang, 67 days. And what that does, it just says to your brain, I'm achieving something here. I'm doing something. I can see progress. I'm working at this. This is a tangible, visible, ink on paper record of actually, I am doing this. And it's making a difference. You see, the next thing I want to say is you need to take action, all right? And the brain needs behaviors that are true to the belief that you're wanting to change. So I could be saying, I'm a writer, and I write thousands to thousands of people every day, whatever. But if I don't take action, if I don't write a few words, if I don't pick up pen and paper, then it's going to be a disconnect, isn't it? You know, you've got to actually take physical action. The brain is wanting something to confirm what you're telling itself. So I take action. I do these things, and it confirms to the brain, he is taking action. So this is true. This is true. This is true. This is true. Oh, okay. And slowly and slowly the brain actually says, okay, no, this is the way that it is. It's not the old Barry we knew once years ago. He's taking changes. And look, this is ongoing. I think I will be writing affirmations for a very, very long time. Because what happens, I believe, is the Spirit, Holy Spirit, reveals deeper and belief structures that need to be worked on, that need to be challenged and changed. You know, and it takes time just to get down to those deeper roots. You know, and I am in transformation mode. And it's little by little, millimeter by millimeter, that I am changing my brain. Hey, I hope you found this helpful, and that's this lesson number 6, I think it is. Okay, we'll see you soon.